The Washington Post says you no longer have to show your social media accounts at the international border. Star Wars Land is here, and Lauren Hawkinson has a lot to say about it. Plus, she has a lot to say about Nintendo and Pokemon Go a year later. All that and so much more coming up on Tech News Today.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Tech News Today is provided by CashFly at CACHEFLY.com.
This is Tech News Today, episode 1810, recorded Friday, July 14th, 2017. This episode of Tech News Today is brought to you by Tracker, a coin-sized tracking device that pairs with your smartphone and keeps you from losing your most valued possessions. Visit thetracker.com right now and enter promo code TNT to save 20% off any order. And by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Home plays a big role in your life. That's why Quicken Loans created Rocket Mortgage. It lets you apply simply and understand the entire mortgage process fully so you can be confident that you're getting the right mortgage for you. Get started at rocketmortgage.com/TNT. Welcome to Tech News Today. This is a show where we talk about some of the biggest tech news stories with people who are passionate about technology. I'm Megan Maroney. Jason Howell is out today, but joining me in his place is Lauren Hawkinson of the Nothing Matters podcast. Welcome back to the show, Lauren.
Hi.
It's been a while. You've been busy. You have, and I'm just so glad to talk to you.
I know. I had to, you know, freshen up a new bow and clip it right in, and then I'm ready to talk the news.
I am very excited. And you know, we will eventually talk about Star Wars Land, which I think might be the most exciting news today, but we'll save it for later.
Yeah. We got to build up to that first.
Okay, good. The Washington Post says that border agents don't have the right to look at your social media accounts. According to a letter obtained by journalists, Customs and Border Patrol are not allowed to search through any data that's stored only in the cloud, and that includes social media data. Border agents are allowed to inspect anything, quote, physically resident on an electronic device transported by an international traveler, end quote. This by no means is crystal clear at this point. It sort of begs some more questions with whatever it answers. But the Post says agents could look through your downloaded text messages, contacts, or notes on a device, but anything that would have to be requested from a remote server is now off limits. Now, Lauren, what kind of privacy do you think we can reasonably expect with respect to our cell phones at the border?
This is a really interesting issue, specifically because a lot of the legislation surrounding what Border Patrol can and cannot do was actually done before the advent of the smartphone. The most recent Supreme Court case that was cited in this letter actually occurred in 2004. So we're actually well outside of iPhone territory when it comes to CPB's ability to commit search and seizure on certain items. My guess would be to say that you should have low confidence at the border. If you do get stopped and they do request you to turn over your cell phone, that is the realist in me saying that. I wanted to point out, though, that this was actually in response to a letter by Senator Ron Wyden, who some people might, you know, their ears might tingle a little bit when they hear that name. And that's because Ron Wyden is a longstanding senior senator from Oregon. And he's actually also on the forefront of net neutrality and internet privacy challenges. You know, it's kind of all going hand in hand currently with everything surrounding net neutrality, data and privacy, and also, you know, counterterrorism measures and immigration measures. They all kind of tie into this one thing. And I find it particularly interesting because the letter went out of its way to say, if you are a confirmed citizen, you won't be specifically stopped for not handing over your cell phone.
Yeah, I mean, which is good news. The letter that you're talking about was February, so it took them a while to respond to it. And when the news first came out, like, we got a lot of people writing in, and there were a lot of news stories about, like, here are all the things you can do. You can wipe your phone, or, you know, you can put it on airplane mode, or you can forget your password, or, you know, all these kind of ways around that we're going to, of course, just make you look more suspicious, but still are right. I mean, we, you know, it is our fourth Fourth Amendment right to, you know, an illegal search and seizure is still illegal. So, you know, it's hard. But I guess now, yeah, you don't have to turn your phone over, like you say, but you still will. They do have the right to detain you, right?
Absolutely. And if for any reason they have any indication that you might not be a U.S. citizen, all of that goes out the window. You know, they could, if for some reason you don't have proper documentation at the border for one reason or another, it gives them an opportunity to, you know, take your cell phone and to see what they can find on it. It is, I guess, slightly reassuring. I wouldn't say that it lifts the, you know, entire weight of the pressure off of citizens, but I'd say that it's a slight comfort to know that they won't be able to access something like iCloud or a Dropbox or your email account because that's hosted on a server. They won't be able to access or request passwords for any of those things, which is good. But at the same time, you know, there are, you know, constant discussions about whether or not it is crucial to know somebody's behavior on social media when they're at the border, or what websites they frequent at the when they're at the border, or all of these things, you know, that can obviously make the already arduous process of crossing the border even more harrowing for some.
Exactly. Well, moving on, you can now pay nearly $3,000 for an Android smartwatch made by Louis Vuitton. But Business Insider says you'll have to call Louis Vuitton on the telephone if you want to order one. The Tambor Horizon runs Android 2.0, Android Wear 2.0, and it has built-in flight tracking and city guide features. It's designed for global travelers. $3,000 might seem like a lot, but it's cheap compared to Louis Vuitton's not smartwatches and to the original 18-karat gold Apple Watch edition. Now, is this something that you will put on your holiday gift wish list, Lauren?
I just want to talk about how poetic it is that they have this advertisement for the $3,000 smartwatch when today a huge, quote-unquote, luxury smartphone company just, like, fully crashed and burned. You know, I think that there's been a constant demand for luxury branded tech goods. Whether or not they've come into any kind of like successful fruition is another story. I mean, you could make an argument that the Apple Watch did pretty well with Hermes, but then you can also say that the Apple Watch hasn't done really that great in general. You can say that, you know, there are people who want luxury goods or customized goods, and in this case, a Louis Vuitton Android smartwatch, and that there will be a market for that. Whether or not that's something that will ever be beyond sort of this gawking at the video type, whether it'll become like a sustainable luxury market, especially for watches. I mean, you're catering to the Rolex crowd there, you know, maybe my information is a little bit dusty, but if I recall correctly, you know, it's still difficult to break into the luxury watch market as a smartwatch.
Yeah, I think so. So you were referring to Virtu, which is, I guess, the luxury phone maker that folded today. Yeah, there. I put a link, Anthony, in there if you want to show some of those Virtu phones with the leather backing that looks like they're made from some sort of animal. But yeah, I don't know if these luxury, I don't travel in circles of people that are looking for these kinds of, there it is, the Virtu, looking for these kinds of luxury items in their smartphone. Especially, I mean, I guess is it a BlackBerry? I guess it's Android, but it looks kind of like a BlackBerry. Yeah, so I'm happy with my $350 Apple Watch, which a lot of people would say is too much for a watch. But then, you know, like I said, people pay the $10,000 for really nice mechanical watches.
Yeah, I think I have a saying, which is like everybody has their different flavor potato chip. Like everybody has the kind of thing that they really want to spend money on or a passion that they really want to have. And, you know, let me tell you something. If your passion is having a $3,000 Louis Vuitton watch with built-in flight tracking and city guide features so you can, you know, jet from country to country in style, absolutely. Feel free. Go ahead. Whether or not that is a sustainable business that can actually build its own market is like totally another story. But for me, like I'm good. Like, but hey, call me when they have like a gold-plated Nintendo Switch, and then we'll talk.
I will. You will be the first person I call as soon as that happens. Well, here's a story that both of us found fascinating today. TechCrunch reports that Google's life science division is testing a unique new way to get rid of mosquitoes. More mosquitoes. Debug Fresno is Alphabet-owned Verily's first foray into solving the global health impact of disease-carrying mosquitoes. The 20 million mosquitoes they plan to release in Fresno carry a bacteria. They're also sterile male mosquitoes, so when they mate with females, the eggs don't hatch. The company has chosen Fresno because the area has a confirmed problem with Zika-carrying mosquitoes. And male mosquitoes, thing I learned today, don't bite. Only the females bite, as in humans. But what do you think about that? What did you find interesting about this story?
Well, I think that it comes at the global health crisis of mosquito-carrying diseases. I mean, on one hand, Zika is obviously a very pressing issue, but you have cases of diseases like malaria, which is also mosquito-transferable. And I believe, there's another one that I am blanking on that is also carried by mosquitoes. There's several of them. But it's interesting to me to see Google tackling this particular a subsidy of Google tackling this subject, specifically because, you know, what it comes down to is that, you know, mosquitoes, whether we want to admit it or not, are necessary in ecosystems. They serve a purpose. They are in this world for a reason. And creating a way that allows the population to be reduced safely and to contain something like Zika, which can be rapidly spreading once it is established, I think that it's something that could be really helpful while also not doing significant long-lasting damage, not only to the mosquito population, but to crops, to pets, to the environment. There's a lot of arguments to be made that this kind of successful, if it is successful, a successful targeting of, a pest with an inborn disease like this could possibly create something that means that we could successfully combat Zika in a way that, again, is sustainable beyond, you know, vaccines and other treatments that they're working on the other side of the coin.
Yeah, according to my notes, it's dengue fever. Mosquitoes also carry dengue fever.
Yes. There it is.
And something called chikungunya, which I'm sure I'm pronouncing wrong, but not in Fresno. No dengue fever yet in Fresno. But yeah, so I mean, it's Google's Verily is doing a lot of things. You know, there's the smart contact lens that they're doing, and you know, I'm tempted after reading this story to think immediately. My mind goes to the scariest type of science fiction, like Blob type movie, like Google. Mm-hmm. You know, is this giant company that's going to? Well, it worked with the mosquitoes. Why don't we use it with the population? But you're right. This is a public health issue, and they're doing good to try to help it. The EPA says that that this experiment is not dangerous at all, except for to the mosquitoes. But, you know, we don't really know what happens with the ecosystem when you do something like this.
Absolutely. I would say that it's a safer method. I mean, I grew up in Sacramento, back when, people were concerned about disease-carrying mosquitoes. You know, they used to have to dust the air or drop tablets in water, still water, in order for mosquito hatchlings because mosquitoes mate and lay eggs in water. So they would, you know, dump tablets in still water. They would dust the skies with some insecticides in certain places. I would say that if this works, it can, you know, again, like, I think that that's a clear margin of safety that then we can use. And, you know, I think that that's really exciting, especially again, because like I said, I grew up like right in Mosquito Town, USA.
Well, I don't know if I don't know if Fresno would be where I chose if I lived in Fresno and I was going to plan a vacation, I think might be a good time with 21 million new mosquitoes coming.
Yes, but not into the tropics or into Latin America. That would be
yes.
Reverse what you want.
And now, finally, the news that we have been waiting for. At this week's Disney D23 Expo, the company has unveiled Star Wars Land. They unveiled a model, just a model. It's going to be a 14-acre park, which will allow fans to control the Millennium Falcon, eat at a restaurant that will resemble Mos Eisley's Cantina, take part in a battle between the First Order and the Resistance, and, of course, wait in soul-crushingly long lines. The park will open at Walt Disney Land and Walt Disney World in 2019. I want to go there.
Yes, I want to go to there immediately. Take me to the timeline where that is already completed. I am ready. You know, I think that this is really interesting. I mean, D23 is becoming the premier place for all Disney and Disney related news, which stretches far and wide now that they have Star Wars properties. And it's interesting, you know, obviously that they've unveiled this sort of takes the wind out of the sails of anything that you might expect at Comic-Con related to Star Wars properties, because this is pretty amazing. I mean, these models are amazing. I was in Disneyland last October, and they had already started to sort of block off areas. You could see where they were going to be carving out where Star Wars Land will exist in Disneyland right now. And I think that it's really exciting, especially because, you know, Disney's really trying to capitalize on these hot properties that they have. You know, they just released the Guardians of the Galaxy ride. They retrofitted the Tower of Terror, so now that's the Guardians of the Galaxy, and that's going to open up to a more expansive Marvel themed world at California Adventure. They want to get started on Star Wars Land. And yeah, I mean, on one hand, yeah, lines are going to be nuts. But on the other hand, I think that this really reinvigorates the park in new directions. And while I think that longstanding Disney stalwarts might want to hold on a little bit to the past, I think that this is going to be a great new addition. And it's going to just really bring the parks into an even more modern era.
And so do you really think they were trying to steal the thunder of Comic-Con, which is next week, like release this before? Like, is there a Comic-Con D23 rivalry?
Ian, I'm not a Disney doctor by any means, and I'm certainly not a comics book doctor. Please don't at me. But what I will say is that it's a week out from Comic-Con, and Disney is holding D23 right now. And Disney's main products include the extended Marvel Universe, Star Wars, parks, and they are certainly making it a big deal. They're making D23 a big deal. So I would say that there will probably be plenty of news coming out of Comic-Con next week, but this is definitely a way for Disney to really get in with its burgeoning audience that's really into, again, comics and Star Wars, and sort of bringing them into the fold and sort of showing that they're putting a lot of effort into these properties that have not really had a lot of representation outside of, in Star Wars particular, for Star Tours, that they're really doubling down on this culture, and that they want to bring it to the real life in park form.
Did you see that minivan? I hadn't seen it, but it was on the website. Mini, as in Minnie Mouse.
The minivan
with a bow.
Yes. Oh, yes.
You need
fun
that.
Fun fact. Actually, my niece is 7 years old, and she thinks that I buy all of my hair bows from Minnie Mouse.
I hope that she believes that forever.
Yes, I'm never going to tell her.
Well, after the break, we will talk about the Nintendo 3DS and Pokemon Go 1 year later. But first, let's take a minute to thank Tracker, the sponsor of this episode. Now, once, about a decade ago, I accidentally put our remote control for our television in my purse, and then I went to work with it in my purse. And ever since then, when we're missing the remote, my husband assumes that I put it in my purse, and then we get in an argument about it until we got the Tracker, and then we put it on our remote control. Now, no more losing the remote and no more arguments with my husband about the remote. With Tracker Pixel, you'll never worry about losing things again. Tracker Pixel is the lightest Bluetooth tracking device on the market. Place a Tracker Pixel on whatever you tend to lose the most. Your keys, your wallet, even your cat or your pet turtle, as I mentioned yesterday. And thanks to Thomas from Honolulu, Hawaii, who wrote in to me and said, we have a 5-inch Russian pet turtle, and sometimes our kids take him out for a walk in the park, and it can go pretty fast. So a tracker on the turtle would indeed be a good idea. Thank you, Thomas, for that feedback about turtles and their speed and tracker. I'm sure the turtle wouldn't mind either. The tracker is small enough to fit on your smallest items, even your 5-inch turtles. When you misplace an item that has a Tracker Pixel attached, you use your smartphone and a 90 decibel alert will help you find it in seconds. It even has a powerful LED light so you can find your items in the dark, and it will be like a headlight for your turtle as well. If you lose your phone, you just press the button on your Tracker Pixel and then your phone rings, even if it's on silent. Every tracker user is part of the largest crowd locate network in the world. And Tracker's 30-day money-back guarantee means you truly have nothing to lose. So right now, before you do anything else, go to thetracker.com, enter promo code TNT to save 20% off any order. That's thetracker.com, promo code TNT for 20% off. Polygon reports that Nintendo has officially stopped production of the new Nintendo 3DS in Japan and Europe. Lauren, what does this mean?
Yeah, so you may be familiar with the American lineup of 3DS and new 3DS and the 2DS and the recently announced 2DS XL. But a limited run in America and a staple in Japan and Europe is the new 3DS, which, you know, naming schema in Nintendo is not always their strong suit. The new 3DS was released a couple years ago, and it had those cute little Famicom buttons. It was smaller than the 3DS XL, which is sold in America, and it had swappable faceplates on it. I own a new 3DS, and yes, yeah, you drug it out of me. I'll admit it. I did import a faceplate from Japan in order to be that person, but what this means is that they will be ceasing production both in Japan and in Europe of the new 3DS, which means that they will be taking it out of their product lineup entirely. They will be releasing the new 2DS XL, which is looking like it's going to be that new mid-level portable console that they'll have for this lineup. But I think that it also calls into question a lot of what Nintendo sees as the future of the 3DS, and specifically portability, given that we are now in a post-Switch era.
We're in a post-Switch era?
Yeah, it's already out there. It's already out in the wild. It exists. And, you know, I will say, being on the streets of San Francisco, there are plenty of people who will pull out their Nintendo Switch on the train and play it on the train. There are people who bring it traveling with them. There are people who have basically set their mobile consoles aside to have the Switch, you know, despite the fact that the Switch has inferior battery life and it's a lot bigger. People are really flocking to that. And I think that it's interesting to see that they're eliminating at least one of their production line, you know, possibly to make room for one of the many other things, one of the many other products that Nintendo has a significant backlog on that is in high demand.
So, okay, when you said post-Switch era, I thought you meant it was over. Like, I thought, like, I hadn't been keeping up. I thought maybe you were saying it's not popular anymore. But no, it's out there. You don't have to anticipate it anymore.
It's out there. It's in the world. It's part of the lexicon. When you go to events now, like, I've been at several events where people will bring their Nintendo Switches and like sync them all up and have like big, you know, gaming parties all together with people who brought them. Like, it's a real thing. And I think that it's grown incredibly fast for how much it really hasn't been widely distributed, especially in America. It seems that Nintendo is understanding that its product production is pretty limited, and that they're going to choose to solidify and to fortify areas where they are selling very strongly. So deprecating the limited product that is the new 3DS, while sad for an owner like me, makes a lot of sense going forward, given that Nintendo has historically had issues getting things in stores.
Now, do you have a Switch as well?
I do.
But which do you prefer to play?
You know what? I will be honest with you. Ever since I got the Nintendo Switch, I'm pretty silly. I play my Nintendo Switch all the time at home. I am super neurotic about bringing it out, even though I have a travel carry case. So when I am traveling, I will still bring my 3DS because I'm totally afraid of being a klutz and breaking my Switch and never having it again. But I'm certain that when I have more confidence about like actually bringing it out in the world, I will be fully playing Zelda Breath of the Wild like on the airplane, like I should be doing right now.
Right. Or in a bar or like wherever you find yourself, right?
Yeah. You know, dentist's office, post office.
Bow store.
Yeah. Your fairies, you know, in line at Popeyes, all over, everywhere. You'll see me.
Okay. All right. So it's been almost a year, a little over a year since Pokemon Go came out. I remember I was on vacation, so I know because all my Facebook 1 year ago vacation photos are coming up, and that I was out of the country, so I couldn't play Pokemon Go. It's been a year. We talked about it with you when it first came out. We've talked about it. What do you think about it a year later? What are your thoughts on the anniversary?
I think that Pokemon Go is a great proof of concept for what AR games could be and can be right now on a smartphone with current technology. And I think that that's amazing. But what I think has been largely the interesting thing is how much Niantic, the creator of Pokemon Go, has really been able to once again create a much smaller niche community that's incredibly passionate about Pokemon Go. I would say that I, of course, see it in way less than I used to out in the wild. I still have friends who play. I think that there's still very much a community around it, and they have been able to seed that community by finally, you know, after, you know, the rocky start of updates, they've been able to bring a lot of interesting and fun events to the table. They've done, you know, Christmas events. They've done anniversaries. They've done stuff in conjunction with Pokemon releases. They've been able to bring in so many new Pokemon. And I think that that's been amazing for the people who've stuck with it. But I think that it's interesting to see the kinds of people that are interested in maintaining Pokemon Go are very similar to those who would have been interested in Niantic's previous forays into AR. Which I think is really interesting. I don't necessarily know if it's like, I don't think that it's going to be a part of the larger gaming lexicon. I think the way that we thought when it initially blew up. And I think that, but I do think that it's, you know, going to be similar to that really passionate, like that Ingress audience that they were able to have for a really long time. I think Pokemon Go is exactly in the same vein. But also at the same time, I mean, Pokemon Go is no longer the end all be all of Pokemon games on mobile. So that's another piece to this, is that the Pokemon company already has an app of their own. So there's something really unique and specific and fun and exciting about Pokemon Go. But I think that it is going to be known for its community and the people who care about it. Rather than it being sort of the defining moment that AR really became a mainstream gaming medium.
But you could argue, I guess, that, you know, even though it wasn't real augmented reality, it maybe brought the idea of augmented reality, the potential to the average person.
Absolutely. I think that it was a wonderful proof of concept. You know, I think that they were able to create something around a lovable title people are really interested in, people were, you know, crazy for. And I think that it made a much larger overall splash than the game by the Pokemon company. I don't know. Do you know about Magikarp Jump at all?
No. Magikarp Jump?
Magikarp Jump is a free-to-play video game that was published by the Pokemon Company, which is the actual company that owns the Pokemon license, and they're like, it's a subsidy with the Nintendo. It's a long story, but anyway, Pokemon Jump. You train a Magikarp, which is the well-known, not very good Pokemon that everybody's like most favorite and worst useless Pokemon. You train it to jump in contests.
Is it a carp?
Yeah.
Like the fish?
Yeah, like the fish. Like the fish, and you bring it around and you train it, and you want to train it to be the best in what they call a Magikarp jumping. So you want to make sure that your Magikarp jumps the highest in Magikarp jumping contests.
I like the carp punching the heavy bag, the punching bag. That was pretty great. I've never seen
amazing,
that.
Amazing, right? It's really funny. It's like, it's definitely in a totally different art style, totally different concept. It's, you know, really delightful. But it's a completely different kind of game. I think it's pretty awesome. But again, I think that really it comes down to the idea that Niantic was able to do what Niantic does best with a title that can transcend basically anything. People love Pokemon. That's just a fact. I want to know what's going to happen in the future, especially when it comes to integrating AR in new and exciting ways, whether or not Pokemon Go will be able to make a full transition to AR with, say, wearing a glasses type device, or wearing something different, or maybe even move into VR. That's going to be really interesting. And I think that Niantic continues to be the company that that pushes forward on AR. And I'm really excited to see where Pokemon is next year.
Well, I know when we talked last year, Animal Crossing is really your jam. And you talked about how Animal Crossing was going to be next, but I haven't heard about that. Is it coming?
They had to delay the Animal Crossing game. I believe the Animal Crossing iOS game is coming out. Let me take a look. I think that it's coming out in 2018. They had to delay it due to, I think they pushed it back due to another Pokemon game called Fire Emblem Heroes. Mm. So hopefully they will be bringing it out, because again, like I said, like I'm like the biggest Animal Crossing fan. I have a really hard time explaining it to others, but I think that if you really like games that are pleasant and like very casual and cool, like, and not too, you know, you don't have to continuously like maintain it on your smartphone, I think that Animal Crossing is the perfect game for that.
I tried Fire Emblem Heroes on my iPhone, and what do you think of that?
You have to be really into Fire Emblem in order for Fire Emblem Heroes to work for you, which I think it comes down to whether or not you are really into the concept of Fire Emblem. I actually, I colloquially call Fire Emblem Battle Marriage to my friends, because that's really what the game is about. You fight people and then you marry people, like that's the whole game. And so,
like the game of life.
Yeah, kind of, except for like less, I would assume less like war and murder happening to you specifically. But it's really funny because like I have a friend of mine who is so into Fire Emblem Heroes, and the way that Fire Emblem Heroes works is that you have to, you know, pull characters, and I've seen her like frantically complete missions in order to get like premium bonus coins so she can finally draw like her favorite character from Fire Emblem. And like people who are really into Fire Emblem are all about Fire Emblem Heroes, and it is like a big moneymaker for Nintendo. For me personally though, like I like Fire Emblem, but like I said, I'm still fingers crossed for that Animal Crossing game. It's gonna be so good.
Well, after the break, one museum is trying to teach people about art through texting. We'll tell you how, but first, let's take a minute to thank Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans, the sponsor of this episode. The mortgage experience wasn't keeping up with the times, like so many things these days. We need a technological solution, and it was dated. It needed a client-focused technological revolution. That's why Quicken Loans created Rocket Mortgage. Rocket Mortgage gives you the confidence that you need when it comes to buying a home or refinancing your existing home loan. If you've bought a home, you know it is scary. It's the most expensive thing you're going to buy. And the mortgage broker will throw a bunch of numbers at you, and it's really complicated, and it does not need to be. Rocket Mortgage is simple. It allows you to fully understand all the details, and then you can be confident that you're getting the right mortgage designed for you and your needs. It's also convenient. They have trusted partners that allow you to share your financial information with Rocket Mortgage at the touch of a button. So you can be in your pajamas, sitting on the couch with your iPhone or your Android phone, and just touch the button. And it is also powerful. So whether you're looking to buy your first home or your 10th, Rocket Mortgage is able to perform thousands of calculations in just a few seconds. Based on your income, your assets, and your credit, Rocket Mortgage will analyze all of your home loan options, all of the options that you qualify for, and then find the one that is designed just for you. Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Apply simply, understand fully, mortgage confidently. You can get started right now. Go to rocketmortgage.com/TNT. Don't forget to add the TNT after that. That's how they know that we sent you. RocketMortgage.com/TNT. Equal housing lender. Licensed in all 50 states. NMLS. ConsumerAccess.org. Number 3030. And we thank Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans for their support. TNT's fan of the day is Jacob Siegel, who sent us this photo of his gaming wall of shame. He said, I was inspired by your last episode to share my gaming backlog. Fortunately, I've played a lot more games than I haven't, but there have been some games I haven't touched yet. Don't worry, I have a gaming wallet, so the CDs aren't just laying around. Thank you for clearing that up. I was worried. I'm also a reader, and it's definitely similar to having a backlog of books that you must read before you get to the next. So, Lauren, this email came in a while ago. He also said, there's a reason I don't throw away my old video game systems. He sent this because we were talking about the Steam sale, and I guess I didn't know that a lot of people like just buy a bunch of games and then they don't get to play them. And I am not a gamer, but I do like to read, and I have that same sort of books of shame that I haven't read. Do you have a gaming wall of shame that you haven't played yet?
Oh, absolutely, all over the place, especially in my Steam library, but also in other spots. I mean, I have so many games. And also, Jacob, I hope that you have already started on Kingdom Hearts 2, because that is going to be really important for you. Kingdom Hearts 3 is coming out, and that's kind of crazy.
Can you play 3 without playing 2?
No.
Okay. Your thought was echoed by Mario, who's in our studio too now. Who
I hope he was like, oh no, please don't. Yes. Got to learn about the story about Mickey Mouse.
Right, because is it like kind of like reading the third Harry Potter book without having read the first two or something?
If Harry Potter was really confusing in anime, yes.
Okay. All right. Well, finally, the San Francisco Museum of Art has just introduced what I believe to be the best messaging bot ever. All you have to do is text the phrase "send me" followed by a word or an emoji, and it will send you a piece of art from its collection. This was amazing. So you can say "send me cats." I said "send me sad," and it sent me this sad photo. If you're watching the video now, you can see that you said "send me some sunshine," and you get a Robert Bechtel photo. I posted this on Twitter, and I had someone who tweeted the I don't know which name the name of this emoji. It's sort of like a ghost, but like a really scary eyes. I think it should be called the Cindy Sherman emoji, because it sent him back a Cindy Sherman piece of photograph. So I don't know if you know who Cindy Sherman is, but she is, you know, probably know which emoji I'm talking about, just the scary one. So have you tried it?
I haven't yet, but this is amazing. The MoMA is wonderful, and their collections are so vast. And the last time I was there, they had a really wonderful display of early computer iconography. So it's really wonderful to see them really embracing technology in a way that feels authentic to San Francisco and the Bay Area.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So the number is, let me get that again. It is, if you're just listening, the number that you call, that you text is, do you have that, Anthony? It's 57251. And ask it to, you have to start with "send me." And it works on Android or iOS. So try it. Lauren, thank you so much for joining us. So You host the Nothing Matters podcast. Are you guys recording that pretty regularly now?
We've been on a brief hiatus, but we'll be starting back soon. It's just, I've been on the convention tour of America. So once I get off of that, I think that probably will be much more regular.
And you're headed to Comic-Con.
I am headed to Comic-Con.
With Comic-Con themed bows. Mm-hmm. So people will be able to recognize you if you happen to be there. Anything else that you're working on that we need to mention?
No, follow me on Twitter. I really like dog gifs and recipes for cake.
Okay, good to know. It's always dog gifs and something else. And so recipes for cake, got it. Have you ever made cake with beans? Like
black beans?
Yeah.
I haven't, but that's because I like my cakes to be as fattening and sugar-filled as possible.
Okay. Well, I'll try to come up with that. And Elle Hawkinson on Twitter, if you want to tweet her your cake recipes or your dog gifs. Thank you so much, Lauren.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Megan.
Take care. TNT records live every Monday through Friday at 4 p.m. Pacific, 7 p.m. Eastern. That's 23 UTC. You can watch live at twit.tv/live, and you can be part of the show by emailing us at tnt@twit.tv, or you can leave us a short voicemail at 260-TNT-SHOW. You can also find us on Twitter. We are at Tech News Today TV, and you can find all the ways to subscribe to our show at twit.tv/TNT. And if you want to tweet at me, I am at Megan Maroney. Thanks to our technical director, Anthony. Thanks to Mario for helping out in the studio and giving me nods or agreeing with all of the gaming talk that we had. Thanks to Kevin for editing the show. And thanks to you for talking tech with us. We'll see you on Monday.